fuck you! Australia! Germany! Africa!
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of Com Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I'll try to keep this explanation short. As I mentioned, the internet line that takes the stream out to the wider world has been experiencing problems of late. And today, that internet line decided to join the bleeding choir invisible. I have just spent the last, 80, 90 minutes of my life trying to explain the problem to a desperate human being in India who, working for probably something on the order of 6 cents an hour, was trying to explain to me that they were terribly, 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 terribly unable to help me. Eventually, during the course of all of this, because I didn't want to go through this again, but I will go through this. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's where you need to go if you want to jump into the chat room, the Madcap Mary Zany multimedia real-time adventure that takes place during the live hours of the program every Monday through Friday from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Jump on in there, pick yourself out a password, a screen name, and jump in and enjoy the conversation with Anatole and Black Wolf and Devin and Earther and Jug of Punch and Jules and Labor Man and Nighthawk and Soapbox Geezer and Stockton Larry and Texas T and Tim from L.A., all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. This program is, of course, listener-supported. And we almost got all the way clear last night. We got $240 to raise this evening. So the regular $200 evening goal plus $40. Yo, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. I thought I did that, but maybe not. You know, the PayPal button's over at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And poor Thomas is just confused. Here, let me help. This program, although it begins late, is live, for this is, in fact, the 14th day of April, 2016. And yeah, it's a tiny little cramped studio with wires everywhere. And so when the streaming computer line went down because Sister Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, says drink. Yeah, I will. Oh, I will. I will. I will. So in the middle of, you know, once you've finally gotten off hold and gotten through to Bangalore, you don't want to do it again. So I got everything repatched, and I tried to sort out the issue. Oh God. And this is in no wise in regard to, or in derogation of, or, being critical of working people anywhere on this planet. I admire the living bejesus out of the dedicated bilingualism that occurs, multilingualism that occurs in ever so many other portions of the globe and about which we feel ever so snotty here in the United States. We can't be learning no other languages. If God wanted Americans to learn other languages, he'd have not made us Americans or something. But even though you've got dedicated people working for 2.5 cents an hour who have gone to all the trouble of learning English, there's still a language barrier. And it's as much mine as theirs, I suppose. Whenever I'm speaking to India, I always try to use my broadcast standard speech. But then again, they'd learned English standard, not American standard, so it's still a problem. I don't know. Perhaps I suspect him as a little fellow. Yeah, it's jolly good. Bloody. Maybe we do, but I don't know. But as it stands, I got everything repatched a half hour late and got us on the air. Hallelujah, glory. From Ron in the frozen north. Ron, Bob, are you a Catholic? Bob, no. Ron, damn. Bob, why do you say that? So we're going to have a program tonight, and this is, of course, yes, by God, Thorn in the Side Thursday. And the thorn apparently extends all the way from Mumbai or Bangalore right into my liver. But so I just wanted you to know where the program was. So there you go. There was no getting them to understand that this internet line doesn't work. Meanwhile, the end of the dialogue. Ron, because if you were Catholic, when you check out, you could always tell St. Peter that you'd been there, done that. But it is. It really and for truly is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the horn, this 14th day of April 2016. And there's lots of thorns. I mean, this isn't a rose bush. This is a blackberry bramble. Thomas is trying to be helpful over here. Bob, have you tried turning your modem off and turning it on again? Mm-hmm. I was asked that question. I was. Oh, well. So that's where we find ourselves. But, you know, we got a good rock solid 2 hours and 18 minutes of broadcasting this evening. Thank you very kindly. Robert in Australia says, you're live in Australia, and I'm happy to be. Yeah, sorry, Sylvia. It just took a little time to get everything repatched. Yeah, thank you, Jack, for letting me know. Ron says, Frontier's motto, our call center is open 24 hours a day somewhere. We sincerely try to provide all assistance short of real help. Now, are you willing to take a short survey to help us improve our customer service? Yeah, you know, that was the one thing. By the time we were done, by the time I hung up, I gave up. I get to do this all again tomorrow. That's an idea. Tim says, you know, say hola and prese el nueve, and they may give you a Spanish speaker in the United States. Another good reason for me to become, you know, multilingual. I knew sooner or later I knew I would learn the downside to only learning más cerveza, por favor. Yeah. But that's okay. I don't want to bore you with all of this delightful, joyous fun, except to say that they have now. Triggered my cantankerous, irascible Scotsman gene, and I'll get up at goddamn daybreak tomorrow and start on this, because I'm severely annoyed. It's probably where a squirrel has chewed through a line. But the problem with the infrastructure here in West Virginia is all the lines have been chewed through by a squirrel. So it's a matter of finding the one they haven't put bubble gum on yet. All right, but really, we got stuff to do. Quit screwing around. You may recall from yesterday evening our note from Paul from Parts Unknown. Well, there's a follow-up. Paul listens in delay. Delay, it's just outside of unknown. Yeah. It says, I was just catching up on yesterday's podcast and got to that part where after you read my email on air asking yourself whether or not my emotional apathy on these shootings was somehow your fault. I want to state right now that it is absolutely not your fault. I feel this way, nor is it the fault of the for-profit media. I really am not a fan of assigning blame. That's adult. Better man than I am, Paul. The Japanese have a saying that I like a lot that roughly translated means fix the problem, not the blame. I know for sure that my apathy comes from no one fixing this problem. We have something on the order of 85% of the populace that wanted gun reform after Sandy Hook, and nothing was done. Our system has been corrupted to the point where only money matters, not the votes of the actual people. For me, actions are more relevant than words. I'm the type of person that spends energy doing things and not talking about them. I understand talking about things is important and needs to happen, but eventually you need to do things. I can only listen so many times about someone who always talks about wanting to start their own business before I just lose interest. If they haven't made any moves to make their desire a reality and made no progress, I have to start holding my tongue, or I'll say, buddy, start your business already or shut the fuck up about it. For me, that's why I'm so excited about the Bernie Sanders campaign. They say he is more authentic. I feel that here's a person that will actually do something, tackle the problems head on, and not nibble around the edges, because after a generation of nibbling around the edges, my generation and younger are starving. Yes, if elected president, he may not get anything done due to Congress, but he will put the problems front and center, he will put forth bills to fix our problems, and we will know exactly which members of Congress to vote out if they're part of the problem and not part of the solution. Paul concludes saying, sorry about not donating much lately. All of my extra cash has gone to Bernie's campaign. I've also been phone banking for him. In fact, I have a two-hour shift tonight after work. It never crossed my mind when I wrote that email that you would blame yourself, my friend. You have nothing to be guilty over. It is just as hard as a progressive to keep your humanity in this country today. That's why Bernie Sanders gives me so much hope. And I share that hope. And it is telling that over the course of this campaign, and especially in the last week or so, Senator Sanders has actually pulled ahead of Hillary Clinton in national polling. That is inspiring indeed. And at most, you know, dead even with her. New York and Pennsylvania will tell us a lot. And if you wander over on social media to see the comments of some hilarians, they'll tell you that it's all over after Pennsylvania and you can just hang it up and give up and quit. Get out of the way of the anointed one, the inevitable one. I'm not so sure. I don't think it's over until the last state has voted. But then again, I've got these silly democratic notions, little de-democratic notions, that everybody ought to get to express their will. And, you know, back in 2008, Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton had the same idea. She was going to campaign to the last echo of the whistle, to use a football analogy. That's not an analogy, that's a metaphor. And so I don't think there's any harm in Senator Sanders doing the same. And gosh, I remember in 2008 when the pissed off anti-Obama pro-Hillary people created a movement that they called Puma. Do you remember Puma? I remember Puma. No, it's not the same as Cougar. Puma stands for Party Unity My Ass. And it was all over the interweb tubes. Well, now all of a sudden, I guess we're supposed to just knuckle under and bow to the inevitable. But not yet. Not yet. And Paul from Parts Unknown's note raises serious issues. I like what he says about you can talk about it for a while, but then you got to do something about it. And part of what we do here, I think, is to try to figure out what, doing something is not, I mean, just running out in the street yelling bruga, bruga, bruga is not the same as doing something about it. It has to be, there has to be, as we as progressives, liberals, what have you, we have to come to some sort of a consensus, some sort of agreement on what the something we're going to do is. For instance, there was news out of Connecticut today. The parents, and oddly enough, I was talking about this just last night, the parents of the little, just barely out of toddlerhood children who got chopped to pieces by Adam Lanza with his mama's Freedom Protector semi-automatic assault rifle, they filed suit against the manufacturer, Remington Arms. And interestingly, today in Superior Court in Connecticut, the trial court judge rejected a motion by the defense, to wit, Remington Arms, that the case be dismissed and they be dismissed from the case based upon the federal statute that provides immunity for arms manufacturers. Whether or not that constitutes error is another matter entirely. It would not bother me in the least if Remington Arms had a judgment rendered against them that sent them right into bankruptcy, at which point they would, of course, reorganize, get rid of the judgment, tell all the parents to go pound sand, and come back again leaner and meaner and still manufacturing the same goddamn guns. But it merely said that the case could go forward. The next thing they do is they come back into court on a motion to dismiss upon the merits of the claim, in which I presume that Remington Arms Pettifogging Defense Counsel will argue that that the parents need to show some sort of negligent design, failure to warn, something that imposes something whereby they can be shown to have breached some duty to people aggrieved by their action and therefore suing them. I don't know. The manufacturer was sued. The gun shop was sued. Maybe the distributor was sued. Can't sue Mother Lanza because young misguided Adam. Well, he blew Mother Lanza. Mother! He blew Mother Lanza away first thing. I don't know what the status of Pappy Lanza is. He had divorced Mother Lanza, and so one would think that somehow or another he insulated himself against liability thereby. I mean, if Mother Lanza, after the divorce, had gotten all liquored up and gone and head-on collision to bus full of nuns, it would be hard to impose liability on Pappy Lanza, wouldn't it? I mean, that's a degree of causation that traditionally in this country courts have had a hard time reaching. Well, if you hadn't divorced her, Buster, if I hadn't divorced her, right? So we'll see how that happens, how that shakes out. Doing things, I mean, there are things. Sit-ins at the National Rifle Association. You know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 people surrounding that god-awful edifice built out of blood there in Fairfax, Virginia. Maybe that would work. But I absolutely get what Paul's talking about. I'd love to know what the actual Japanese for fix the problem, not the blame is. You can't, blame is something you do after the fact, after you've gotten done shoveling out from, the problem in the first place. Yeah. A couple of interesting stories out there to start the program this evening. Oh, but see, I just get in trouble, Tim. Tim wants me to say, hola, habla usted español? But they'd hear my hillbilly accent. I could never get away with it. I've struck a nerve here because everybody apparently has a similar experience. Randy in PA says, whenever I call India for DSL help, they ask me to run Internet Explorer on my Mac in order that I can check my download speed, which I can't because I'm on a Mac. What if I were on Windows 10? The browser's now called Microsoft Edge. Why am I checking my download speed? Why aren't they checking my download speed? I know. It's like wanting to call the Psychic Friends Network and they say, what's your credit card number? And you say, you tell me. Ah, okay. Glad to know it. My broken internet, Steve in New York, says it's clearly a broken dispensople. And I wouldn't doubt it at all, because if your dispensople isn't in proper alignment with your flageolet, then your Knuten valve simply will not work. So, kind of a follow-up to a story from last night, a story that really did incense a number of people. And in many ways, a tale of two countries. Last night, earlier this morning, whenever you listened, we discussed the case of young Mariah Walton, who is struggling to cling to life that having been caused by her weirdo Mormon parents who decided to pray over her instead of getting her medical treatment when she was an infant. Well, oddly enough, similar things happen in Canada. In particular, this case arises out of the province of Alberta, where David Stephen and his wife Colette, back in 2012, let their toddler son lay there in his crib and die. Now, in this case, they aren't weirdo Mormons or Church of Christ Scientist or First Church of Holiness Redeemer Pentecostals. No, these would appear to be some New Age fuckwits. And lo and behold, after little Ezekiel died of meningitis, bless their hearts, the Canadian government came in and prosecuted their deadly asses. And put David and Colette Stephen, don't know. Something about it being in Canada makes me think it's Stephen. Put them on trial. They had lived in Glenwood, Alberta. Initially, they thought their precious little baby boy had the flu, or maybe the croup. And by the time they finally and at the tender age of 2 years old, the little fella had never seen or been seen by a physician of any sort. Mm-hmm. Well, by the time they life-flighted little Ezekiel to a bigger hospital in Calgary, they managed to revive him for a little bit. But at that point, the doctor said he was probably already brain dead. And on March 18th, 2012, 5 days after he arrived at the hospital in Calgary, they took him off life support and he died. And that's when the authorities moved in. David Stephen said that he got very nervous when police showed up at the hospital after little Ezekiel died. At trial, he said, "You know what my main concern was at that point? It was the idea that they might think we were negligent parents if they found out we didn't put Ezekiel in a car seat." Oh. That's because by the time they took him to hospital, the little fellow was so stiff from inflammation that's caused by meningitis that he couldn't sit up in a car seat, and they laid him on a mattress in the back of the family car to take him to the hospital. Yeah. No, these people are some goddamn lulus. The charge was failure to provide the necessities of life. And, you know, when you live in a civilized country, a civilized, albeit frozen country, like Canada, where you've got national health care and anybody who is sick can go to the doctor, and so you do not have the argument present that, well, we was just doing the best as we could and praying over him because we didn't have no health care. Well, it means that you could have a statute like or a criminal charge like failure to provide the necessities of life. Because, see, when the little fella got sick, they treated him with natural remedies. Newsflash! Olive leaf extract is not worth dog shit in treating meningitis. Hot pepper and horseradish smoothies aren't worth fuck-fuckity-fuck in treating meningitis. Water with maple syrup, as delightful as fresh maple syrup is, isn't worth a good tinker's goddamn in treating meningitis. And juice with frozen berries, while a delightful treat for any 2-year-old toddler, is no help whatsoever with, again, meningitis. See, these people were in the business of hustling so-called nutritional supplements. As far back as 2004, Health Canada tried and failed to stop the Steffens from marketing and profiting by a nutritional supplement they called Empower Plus, all one word. Empower Plus, the Steffens claimed, would make your mental illness all better. Now, even though they weren't able to stop the marketing of it, the Canadian government did issue warnings about Empower Plus, and it turns out that as the little child lay with his brain being burned up by meningitis, well, they gave the little guy some Empower Plus, and that didn't work either. And even on the witness stand, taking the stand in his own defense, and I don't know enough about the Canadian system to know if you've even got a right against self-incrimination there. Maybe you have to take the witness stand. I don't know. But Mr. Steffen said on the stand, "I think it's very likely he died of meningitis, but I've still got some questions around it. I've heard many situations like that, but never once have I heard a situation like ours." All they had to do, these two monstrous parents, because see, you can almost see it all playing out in the internet ads and the stuff that you never click. "Our son recovered from debilitating disease with this supplement. Click now." All they had to do was avail themselves of the medicine that is a matter of right to every Canadian, even little 2-year-old, and perhaps especially little 2-year-old Canadians. Now, what was the Stephens theory of the case? He says that the government was targeting them in order to force other parents, you know, via some unelected black robe judges, as we say down here. Maybe it's unelected black robed white coiffed judges up there, forcing them to vaccinate their children. Yep. Anti-vaxxers. Did I mention that the child was 2 years old and had never had a single doctor's visit? Yeah, I did. And because Canada is a humane country, you know, they will not put this couple away for umpty bajillion years in some hellhole Canadian prison run by a for-profit corporation. Why these two idiots will probably be out in no time flat. If he's convicted. David Stephan testified for something on the order of 3 days. So far, the trial is 5 weeks old. Watch this space. 2.5 weeks. And you know, there's lots of us parents in the Horn Family Community Congregation. How many of us would just let a 2-year-old toddler lay there and get sicker and sicker and sicker and sicker and sicker? Until the inflammation was so bad that the little fella couldn't bend to sit. Ah, here, baby. Poppy's got you some water and maple syrup to make you all better. Maybe you've got some crazy in the brain. Here's some Empower Plus that we sell to the rubes out on the internet. You know, they only took him to the hospital when he quit breathing. When they did a CT of the little fella's brain, they saw evidence, the doctors showed them on the CT, evidence of multiple seizures that had rendered little Ezekiel's brain useless. Except for the autonomic functions. Stephan testified, prior to this, we were thinking he was getting potentially the flu. At this point, there's a lot of overlapping symptoms between the flu and meningitis. Because, you know, he's a doctor. Hindsight is 20/20. Looking back at it, had I known that this was going to take place, I would have been the first person to be advocating something else. Nobody would want an outcome like this as a parent. Sigh. God. But at least in Canada, as opposed to Idaho, at least in Canada, something approaching justice for the little dead boy can be sought. Whereas in Idaho, you just put the little dead boy in his little toddler grave at a rate of something like 10 times the infant mortality rate for the whole state. And, well, I guess go make another baby for Jesus. Whew. But I thought that was kind of an interesting counterpoint to last night's story. Other things? Yeah. Wanted to make mention of something to you because It seems so incongruous. I spend a lot of time here talking about the predations of the extraction industry in Appalachia. And we've talked about the predations of the extraction industry in other places. And a couple of years back, I mentioned that there was a plan going forward to do mountaintop removal in, of all places, the U.S.-Mexican border along the Rio Grande. Oh, backing up just for a second to the story out of Canada. Tim from L.A. pointing out, Alberta? According to the Canadian Hornedanistas and Maloyalists, Alberta is the Texas of Canada, so an occasional moran does come from Canada. Keep in mind, these are the same folks who have a shotgun rack in their truck without the shotgun. On a positive note, the Albertans are not anti-single-payer health care. They ain't that stupid. Unlike, you know, this family, that family. In Australia, Robert writes, I keep saying to people who recommend that I try New Age crap for my arthritis that if it actually worked all the time, we wouldn't need doctors or hospitals or medical research. But, Robert notes, I say it using more colorful words. Yeah, I know. Anti-vaxxers. Goddamn. Thank you, by the way, thank you very kindly to Matthew. Thank you, Matthew, for getting us started. $215 to go for this evening's fundraising goal. It is much appreciated, Matthew. And hopefully other people will jump in alongside you. Ton of bills to pay. That's how that goes. Because, well, ton of bills to pay to run this whole affair. Well, you know, that and catch up on the payments for Agnes's masseur and the cabana technician and the rent on the Gulfstream 5 hangar. And, well, the rent on the Gulfstream, the payment on the Gulfstream 5, frankly. And it would be a damn shame to get the Maybach repoed. But no, I saw this story the other day. And it just occasioned another bout of son of a bitch. There's going to be a march in Maverick County, Texas, Saturday. And by God, if there was any way to be there, I would. Not because I want to go and say, hi, I'm Bob. No, just because my personal belief, and we know how I feel about that word, is that the only hope we have against any of these predatory fucks is by having a certain degree of intersectionality and collegiality among all the oppressed and burdened people who have to deal with these predatory pricks. So down in Maverick County, Texas, which sits on the Mexican border, as a good bit of Texas does along the Rio Grande, I never know whether to pronounce that E at the end, the Grande. This means big river. I mean, Jesus. Down there along the Mexican, the U.S.-Mexican border on the big river, there's a deposit of some carboniferous filth that almost kind of might be sort of considered to be in the same family with coal. And so a bunch of predators operating as a company called Dos Republics Dos Republicas have decided they're going to just shit all over the land down there in order to get this not quite coal filth. But because it's not quite coal filth, you can't burn it in the United States because of the Kenyan Muslim usurper Obama's job killing EPA and their job killing regulations. So instead, they put it on railroad cars and they ship it into Mexico, where, well, shit, you want to burn old tires for energy in Mexico, you can do that. And they've been fighting this battle for a while. 3 years ago, in 2013, the Texas Railroad Commission, and isn't the latest generation of the Bush crime family, the Bush family evil empire, isn't that person sitting on the Texas Railroad Commission now? George P. Bush, the one who was busted for doing donuts in a neighbor's yard, son of Jebbia. The one that back in the 1988 Republican National Convention, that Barbara Bush referred to as the little brown one. Isn't he on the Texas Railroad Commission now? And for those unfamiliar with Texas politics, and God knows I mostly am too, the Texas Railroad Commission wields tremendous power in the state. And so the Texas Railroad Commission issued the permit to Dos Republicas to shit all over the land in Maverick County that has some miserable carboniferous filth in it. So come Saturday, they're going to march. Members of Texas's Lipan Apaches, Pacuache Band of the Coilticán Nation, Carrizo Comecrudo Tribe, the Comanche Nation of Oklahoma, and a lot of other indigenous peoples, they're going to march Saturday from the Rio Grande to the coal mine. Now, among other things, the land that the Dos Republicas are trying to destroy, it's a burial ground. Yeah. It's kind of a consortium, these predatory pricks. North American Coal Corporation, Camino Real Fuels, Dos Republicas. Dos Republicas is owned by Mexican companies, and they partnered with North American Coal Corporation and Camino Real Fuels. The county government in Maverick County, whose county seat is Eagle Pass, they've worked to try to stop the mine. There's an online petition at change.org that has more than 3,500 signatures on it. Among other things, the tribes and their associated allies claim that the provisions of the National Historic Preservation Act were not followed. The tribes were not consulted. And this is about 6,300 acres of land in Maverick County. And there will probably be blasting involved. And there will be toxins released by the railroad transportation of the filth known as low-grade coal. And of course, such water as nearby the little creek. Guess what it runs into? Yeah, the Rio Grande. They've challenged the permit in court several times. They have not yet won. But I'd love to stand shoulder to shoulder with them, and if nothing else, I'm reaching out to let them know that we are in support of them here in Appalachistan. Support for the latest challenge to the mine is growing. Tane Ward said, when we started meeting, we started alerting more and more allies. People may be coming to the march from as far away as the Dakotas. And even though some of the indigenous groups don't have any claim on the land in Texas, they're standing with the local indigenous population in solidarity with all Native Americans whose lands have been taken. Meanwhile, the spokes creep for Dos Republicas, a guy named Rudy Rodriguez, says, we respect the free speech of everyone involved, but we've moved over 1 million tons of coal by rail, and it's in a remote area where people don't really know what's going on. Heard that one before. Well, I mean, we're only blowing up the mountain, and nobody lives there. And then Rudy Rodriguez went on with the next usual claim. Well, we've hired 180 people, and we pay $1.3 million in monthly salaries. That stuff for shitty coal, that stuff must bring a pretty penny. But wait a minute. I thought coal was dead. There was an article in the New York Times just today that said, coal is on the decline. Yeah, come on down to Appalachia, boys. I'll show you some declining coal. The angry Indian tells me that everybody who can make it down to Maverick County is going. Yeah, they don't need one more pasty-faced, doughy, white dude there. But I will send them a statement of support. Because it's the same struggle. Maybe different geography, different ethnicities, but it's the same struggle. It's the same struggle that Berta Cáceres was involved in down in Honduras when the right-wing thugs came and murdered her after the coup that Hillary Clinton supported. And another of her allies, of course, has since been killed. There's a monstrous right-wing backlash in Central America. If you're in I looked at the map. If you're in Texas, I guess Maverick County's not too much that far, or he's not that far from to the west of San Antonio. And if I understand correctly, it is a place of stark beauty. I saw a picture of the Maverick County Courthouse there in Eagle Pass, and wow, just gorgeous. Little place, not a lot of people there at all. But, you know, there don't have to be a lot of people somewhere for that place to be home. Oh, okay, Texas T tells me it's about 2.5 hours west of San Antonio by car. And see, when they start blowing up places to get at shitty carboniferous rock that doesn't really qualify, almost doesn't qualify as coal. It tells you a little something about the status of hydrocarbons on planet Earth. We're running out. And if at some point in time these monsters are not checked in their predatory impulses, they really will destroy anywhere that is fit for human habitation. So I'm gonna follow this story, and if I can be of any assistance to them, I will. I don't know if they know about all the studies, and I'm gonna try to draw their attention to it. All the studies that show what blasting does to human populations. Because, you know, in another 6-7 years, they'll start getting the cancer clusters up around Eau Claire, Wisconsin. What is it, New Auburn? Where they're blasting the bejesus out of the sand hills to get frack sand. Doesn't matter what they're blasting for, it's the blasting itself. Fine, ultra-fine particulates, things that your body can't stop, that go into you whether you like it or not. Poison. If you want to read the full story, it's at texastribune.org. Julian Aguilar, sorry, my Spanish pronunciation sucketh. Has the story: Native American groups join effort against coal mine. And he has he's done a very good job of documenting this struggle for basic human rights. Because, see, I have a hard time describing the Lipan Apaches, the Pacuache Band of the Cahuilticán Nation, the Carrizo Comecrudo Tribe, the Comanches of Oklahoma. I have a hard time calling them environmentalists. They may very well be North America's first environmentalists. And maybe they would correct me. But I think their concerns extend far past some sort of esoteric concern with the land and extend into the ability of their culture to remain a viable entity despite years of oppression and attempted genocide. To wrap all that under the simplistic rubric of environmentalist seems a mite poorly. Yeah. Now, I've been filibustering for about an hour now because of our late start. So I should probably note that the lines are open. If you want to engage in conversation, you are welcome to do so. You know how to reach the program, I trust. Area code 304-574-8178 or the stress line 304-663-4676. Or Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn. BOBKINCAIDHORN. Oh, and a note in from Bob in Texas, from whom we heard last night. Knowing that there's $225 to be raised for this evening's goal, Bob just sent me a note saying, please accept a $100 challenge, dollar-for-dollar matching challenge for this evening. So there it is. If we can raise $100, it'll turn into $200. Courtesy of Bob in Texas. Thank you, Bob. Thank you very kindly. These challenges are nice because it affords you an opportunity to turn your $5 into 10 or 10 into 20, etc. So that is very, very, very helpful indeed. And thanks very kindly, Bob. Thank you very much. You are a tremendous supporter of what we try to do here. Let's go talk to Thomas. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
I'm just slowly gliding and floating back down to earth from my sense of sort of towering volcanic rage.
Yeah, any consolation, I know exactly how you feel. I'm more than happy to commiserate with you with a bowl of curry.
I don't want to we got listeners in India.
Oh yeah, I know. I love my internet.
I was looking at my Podbean statistics the other day. We got a tiny little, and that's where people can go and get the podcast. That's just another way to get the program, Podbean.com. But it provided me some analytics, and lo and behold, we got listeners in India. Hi, not mean. I'm not trying to be rude or anything. I have a great deal of admiration for the culture and the people and the determination.
And another fine country who kicked the British out.
Yeah, and did it without really having to shoot at them.
Thank you. Slightly better than us.
Although they did then in turn turn to shooting at each other.
Well, yeah, that's not good. That kind of defeats the purpose. But I've had technical woes. My show was actually cut short today. That goes to what Jeff was talking about on our network earlier today, about how he found a study in Forbes found that If you pay your fast food workers, say, a living wage, they work harder for you. Imagine if that was, like, worldwide. And I'm not saying they don't try hard, and I'm not disparaging their work. But imagine if we didn't need, like, suicide nets for our workers. And we had to pay a little bit more for things. But if everybody was paid a living wage, don't you think we could afford that? Or would the robots take over? Bob, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. No, I got you. That 17 things going on at one time.
Okay, I thought I broke myself again.
No. You're not broken. You are no. You're not at all. So you were not talking to yourself.
Okay, good.
You were talking to the Horn Family Community Congregation and me.
Yeah, well, that is true.
I saw some buffering over on the streaming machine, and And I'm sorry, I was distracted for a moment, Thomas.
No, believe me, I checked the stream time just to make sure that it hasn't reset for the third time over here. So believe me, I totally understand and comprehend what you're going through. The other reason, but you see my point, right? Like, if we actually paid everyone in the world a living wage, we might be able to have a better community. People might not want to.
I mean, that's the dream of humanity, isn't it? Not starving.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they made a whole TV series about it. It was called Star Trek. Nobody starved anymore.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. Would that dedicated, hardworking person at the call center in India, who's making 3.5 cents an hour, or 10 million rupees, as the case may be, I don't know what the exchange rate is in India.
Yeah, neither do I.
But would that person, quite frankly, that job wouldn't be in India if Frontier had to pay the same amount of money that they pay to an American worker. And this, I'm not trying to argue in favor of the American worker above all workers, but this oligarchic dream of globalization does not include anything resembling fairness or decency or parity or living wages. I mean, we really don't have to go back, although it's hard not to talk about the suicide nets at the goddamn Chinese technology factories.
No, you're absolutely right, and that's where I was going with this, because it's like productivity, when you feel like you're earning something, whether it's for your own business or for a living wage, your productivity and want to earn goes up. It's just because you feel better about yourself. It's a psychological thing, right?
Well, I mean, there was an old saying back in the days of the Soviet Union, in which workers would joke, very quietly, mind you.
Yes, Jim, true.
So long as they pretend to pay us, we'll pretend to work.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. And that's what you have at $7.25 an hour. And by the way, how can you bribe a congressperson at $7.25 an hour? That's just, you can't.
Sparky sent me something earlier. It was the interview with the... what's the name of the outfit? It was Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton's interview with the Inquirer and Philadelphia Daily News editorial boards.
Oh, that must have been fun.
I got the audio. I'll probably run it here in a little bit. It's only a 4-minute clip. It's just the 4 minutes that she spent being furious that anyone would dare ask her about her speaking fees and what she said when she was earning those $275,000 in an hour. And the thing that, and if I run the clip, well, you know what, maybe we'll just do that while you and I are talking.
Sure.
I can't, because you won't be able to hear it.
What I could do is I could mute.
No, I could do this. Because the question gets pointed out, which she studiously ignores. That what she was making in giving that speech is something that will take an American worker years and years and years and years.
Multiple Americans. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. But she's for the little guy. A real little guy who can afford to pay her speeches.
Well, I mean, you know, I think Lloyd Blankfein's only about 2'10".
Yeah, and if we're talking about the little guy on Donald Trump, well, yikes.
If you be a kid, let's don't go there. Okay, well, I'm searching here.
To be fair, Bob, it is pageant night, and I gotta preempt you because I'm an asshole. So,
well,
I'm
yes, I understand. Okay, $1 equals 66.63745 Indian rupees. So I was being a bit of a smartass.
Yeah, well, math is hard. I always go with math is hard, and that fixes everything.
I'm trying to get this clip up here so we can both hear it. And I'm typing the whole goddamn title.
I'm one of those same people who cannot type and talk at the same time.
Well, no, I'm just, I get so frustrated trying to find stuff on YouTube.
Oh, I hear you.
No results.
Yay.
And yet there it is. I mean, I'm looking at it on the other machine. Call. Oh shoot. Hang on here.
I feel like I make your day more difficult, Bob.
No, you're not.
I bring joy to everyone I touch. Really, that's what I feel today. So, in this conversation, though, while you're typing.
Okay, so here in a minute, it'll probably pop up in my, in my email inbox, and that'll be cool.
Okay, so with Hillary, the not corporate whore, never ever. Just want to make clear.
I didn't hear that.
Okay, yeah, and I didn't say it. I didn't. Though it was funny hearing the morning jerks, surrogates for Hillary say it, calling her it, saying don't call it her that.
Yeah, he said she, it, Dr. Song said she it, but Dr. Song didn't say that.
No, you're right, but that's what they were insinuating.
He said if we keep electing, if the Democratic Party keeps electing corporate whores, who? And I guess what, they're hypersensitive?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know how they're going to handle a general one, you know, if the Donald, you know, whips out his schlong to show everybody.
Ah!
Exactly. Who's hypersensitive now, Bob? But you know what I mean? I mean, or if Ted Cruz gets all, you know, whatever it is he does with his lip on the debate stage. I'm still trying to figure that one out.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, there went my little snack after the program.
Sorry, I can't help it. I bringer of joy, Bob.
Yes, you are. Okay, so Sparky has kindly provided me the clip. It is all of 4 minutes long, so it shouldn't be that much of a chore, okay?
It is Hillary, though.
Well, just stop that. We're going to be grown up about this. We're going to disagree with policies, politics, positions, philosophy, and right, because Bernie would like for us to operate that way.
I know. I was naughty.
So here we go.
Dan Bedling, Inquirer Politics editor. It's a thrill to be able to have a live Q&A with you, but I want to come back to those lunches, especially since you just used the words more public disclosure. As a citizen, I'm really unsatisfied with your saying you won't disclose the transcripts of those lunch speeches for which you earned more money than most Americans make in several years because your rival candidates, whom you think are less qualified to be president than you, won't show us theirs. Especially in light of, you know, many Americans having an issue, you know, in many a public opinion survey with your trustworthiness. I really want to know what was said at those lunches, and I would love you to either release those transcripts or convince me as a journalist in this trade for more than 30 years that when a major public official refuses to give full disclosure of a transcript like that, that that official or that leader has something to hide.
Oh, shit, buddy. You're going to go away in a basket in pieces.
Vince Foster. Oh, wait. Stop.
Sorry. Quit that.
I'm sorry.
I can't. You're why we can't have nice things.
I'm sorry. It's the former Republican in me.
Quit it. and by the way, Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, says referring to Democratic Party whores is an insult to working girls.
Which is true. No, totally. I made that point on my show.
Okay, but so we've got the question there. And is it an unfair question? Is it an unfair question?
It's a sexist question. My former Hillary supporting.
No, goddammit, no, it's not a sexist question.
Well, she finally is earning more than any woman on the planet should. So.
Wait, should?
Okay, there's my Republican self coming in. Damn it, Bob.
You've got to get that goddamned internal monologue under control, Thomas.
I know, right? I'm going to get yelled at for this. I know.
But I mean, the guy was straightforward, and, you know, he was kind of that sort of peremptory, sort of, no bullshit Philadelphia way. It reminds me of the old story about the difference between Pittsburgh and Philly. You know,
yeah.
If you're walking on the street in downtown Pittsburgh, I've told this a million times, and you know, you're walking down Forbes Avenue and you look at a guy and you go, "Hey, buddy, what time is it?" He'll look at his wrist and go, "Quarter to two. You need a watch?" And, you know, hand you the, because they're like that in Pittsburgh. But if you're standing in downtown Philly, you look at a guy and go, "Hey, buddy, you got the time?" He'll look at you and go, "What do I look like? Big fucking Ben, buy a fucking watch, you useless piece of shit." and you know, so this guy was that, you know, kind of pushing. He was pushing. He wasn't gonna. And I guess, you know, I guess Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton wanted to show that she can, you know, she can play there with the hard asses in Philly. You ready? We'll go back to a little chunk of the question, because I mean. You know, I'm not going to say anything about tone, although she did. I'm not going to say anything about, you know, how she sounds or any, but rather just listen to her not answer the goddamn question.
In this trade for more than 30 years, that when a major public official refuses to give full disclosure of a transcript like that, that official or that leader has something to hide.
Well, I can only say this. Let's make sure everybody is already as transparent as I. I'm sure you've pressed Senator Sanders to release his tax returns, because, of course, he hasn't.
And, of course, no one said a goddamn word about tax returns.
Of course.
This was a question about the transcripts of her $275,000 an hour speeches.
I feel, Bob, like we're playing a game. Reflection deflection.
Something like that. And so the question is, explain to me why it's okay not to release the transcripts. And the question is, that, and the answer is, well, that fucking Bernie Sanders and his tax returns.
Secretary, with all due respect, the question is, will you disclose the transcripts of your lunches?
I want to make a broader point, because I've already told you what my answer is. When everybody meets the same standard, so will I. You know, I have to be very...
But Bernie already released his speech transcripts all $1,800 worth of them. Right?
Yep.
And frankly, I don't give a rotten fuck what Ted Cruz got paid or how much he got paid. I know what that crazy little bastard says.
I'll do whatever you want. Just pay me.
No. Behold me. Yay. I am America's anointed future king of America. Anybody got a booger? There went that.
It was me this time. Yeah, it was Bob. It wasn't me this time.
That was on me. That one was on Mr. Shaw. Okay, so still no answer.
Very clear with you. I believe that the American people have more information about me than anybody who's ever run for president.
Yeah, but, ma'am, they don't have the transcripts of your fucking speeches that you got paid $275,000 fucking dollars to fucking deliver. So everything else, no, we don't have that.
I believe there has been a concerted effort to tear me down, to attack me, to criticize me, and there certainly has been a double standard.
Paranoid much?
No,
Thomas. I mean, let's be fair. I'm the first to acknowledge that there is a Republican built filth machine.
That is
25 years old that you yourself have confessed has influenced you from time to time.
Yes, and in fact, I go back to I joke about it because to be honest, I always liked Hillary more than Bill. So I always defended her more than Bill. And I never liked the rumors about Vince Foster because, first of all, she doesn't even like guns. And so there. And second of all, go back to one. And just the whole nonsensical arguments that they've always thrown at her, it almost comes back to she wants this job.
Yeah, but the filth machine is real, and it's running on 200 proof pure hate at this point,
yes.
And it is banging on all 32 cylinders. Okay.
Yes, but she's a progressive who can get things done, Bob. Remember?
Okay, so I got that part. But the thing is, she's calling herself a practical progressive, a pragmatic progressive. And we live and whether she likes it or not, I'm sure it was not going to be the issue of the campaign season if it was up to her. But the issue is income inequality. And if you can get $275,000 for talking for 1 hour, and that takes a minimum wage worker something on the order of between 7 and 14 years to earn, then I think it's a fair question. And it's not, and you know what? The people, I am not influenced. Let me say this 100% clearly. I am not influenced by the right-wing filth machine because I recognized it for what it was a very, very long time ago. All right? It doesn't have any influence on me whatsoever. But in a country where people of Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton's class out earn the vast majority of working people, how is this not an issue? And for her to complain, I'm being over scrutinized. Well, you know what? You don't want the scrutiny, ma'am. There's a couple of things you can do. You can get out of the fucking race. You know, Harry S. Truman said, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen.
Now,
just release the goddamn transcripts. Because as long as she does not release the transcripts, it contributes to the sense, right or wrong, that there's something to hide in those transcripts.
Bob, I have a question, and this is a serious question.
Yes.
What are these people who support Hillary 1,010%? going to do when the general happens, if she's the nominee. And they throw everything, including the FBI indictment, at her. What, how are they going
to... There's not going to be an indictment.
I know, but I mean, you know where I'm going with this, right? I with the right wing. What, how are they going to handle that emotion?
They're going to claim that she's being persecuted because she's a woman.
Yeah, and that's only going to get so far.
It's all she's got.
Sadly.
Well, no, it's not all she's got. They're gonna complain that she's being persecuted because she's a woman, and that she's being persecuted because of Clinton derangement syndrome. That much of it's true. Clinton derangement syndrome exists. That's why an actual member of the United States Congress shot watermelons in his backyard to prove that she killed Vince Foster. Okay, it's real. It is absolutely real. I mean, and the Republican Party's sense of shame is non-existent. At the same time that Newt Gingrich was going on and on and on, ad nauseum about, you know, Monica Lewinsky, he was banging his own intern like a cheap gong. And then when Newt had to leave, the next guy came along to be Speaker of the House and never even got sworn in because it turned out that he had a ficky fick problem. So then they settled on Denny Hastert, who he's an old jock. I mean, he was a wrestling coach. I mean, you know, what could possibly... And it turns out he's paying blackmail to the boys whose groins he rubbed. Because I believe counsel for Mr. Hastert declared in court that he wasn't sure if rubbing a teenage boy's groin rose to the level of sexual abuse. Okay? So, she's got an argument, and there's a misogyny argument, too. Okay?
You're absolutely right.
If she becomes president of the United States, we are going to have 4 to 8 years of relentless misogyny, the way that we have had 8 years of relentless racism with Barack Obama. Okay? It's a fact. But by the same token, if Bernie Sanders becomes the president, we will have 4 to 8 years of relentless red baiting.
No, don't forget anti-Semitism.
Well, and that, oh yeah, y'all know
that will come out eventually.
Yeah, commie self-hating Jew. Yeah, 8 years, and so there's that regardless of who. Winds up being the president if the person who winds up being president is a Democrat. But for Mrs. Clinton to say that there's a double standard, well, that didn't sit any too well with our buddy Steve in New York, Thomas, who said, let me get this straight. It's a double standard? Who else has given $225,000 speeches to the people she's saying she's going to get tough on?
Yeah.
Ding, 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 ding. Early toaster nomination there, Steve. Marty points out an even more interesting question is, during a couple of her fundraiser appearances, the media were not only not allowed in, but then apparently a white noise generator was aimed at them. I want to know what she said during those appearances, one of which happened at the home of Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper. You know, the press gaggle is all gathered out there on the street. And they turn a white noise generator on him to make sure that nothing she says can be heard. Boy, I tell you what. I mean, she says she's the most transparent candidate we've ever had. Man, that's some trans-damn-parency.
I guarantee that she probably went after drugs. Because
Hickenlooper.
Oh, yeah, thank you. He's undecided and still needs more study. He's on the same Hillary Clinton thing, and I don't see how her administration is going to help foster, you know, decriminalization of marijuana, you know? So it's, you know, I honestly don't know anymore, Bob. But back to the point is, would we not do better as a nation and be able to do things and build jobs and everything else, wouldn't trickle up work from the bottom up?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Because if people are making money, you know, poor folks and working folks and middle class folks, we spend money. Okay. It's why we remain poor and middle class and working class. We spend money. We don't sit and, we don't do what Jim Justice here in West Virginia says. And says, I got this pile of gold and I sit and I stare at it every day. Yeah, okay. I wish Anonymous would go ahead and just get the goddamn transcripts and release them so we can, if she's going to be the nominee, I would prefer to deal with them, with the transcripts now, than have them dumped on the American people somewhere around October as a, you know, surprise. But there's more to this clip. Shall we get back to it, Thomas?
Yeah, I only have a few minutes and I already got a phone call while I was on here, but yes.
Yeah, okay, I did see what I do.
I have more information about me than anybody who's ever run for president. I believe there has been a concerted effort to tear me down, to attack me, to criticize me, and there certainly has been a double standard between me and others who run. And at some point, you know, I have to say, look, let's meet the same standards. Let's start with tax returns. That has been the standard. I have more than met that standard. People have been pouring over my tax returns going back 30 years, and as I said, 8 years are posted on my website. That is a very clear difference between me and Senator Sanders, between me and Donald Trump. And I, frankly, am always a little bit bewildered. Everybody keeps asking me to do more and more and more. And I have said, let's have the same standard. And I will be happy to do the same. But when you have transparency demands that only I meet and others running do not, you know, it kind of raises a question in my mind, will people ever be held to the same standard that I've been held to?
You know, when people start giving $275,000 an hour speeches, I want their transcripts too.
Yeah, and can I just say this before I go? I get where she's coming from about the higher standard thing. And it comes into her being a woman, and I'm not, except for the how my voice sounds. I'm told drunk lesbian by Trump supporters. And I'm proud to wear that moniker. But I get where she's coming from to a point, and then that point stops. And it's like, if you want to dispel this, you could do one of two things, Secretary Clinton. You could stop giving the fucking speeches, or you could release the speeches, because like you tell every poor family who's gotten pulled over the police, let the cops search your car. You got nothing to hide. Let the American people read the transcripts, because you got nothing fucking to hide. Or don't give the speeches. Make a promise to not give any more speeches. Somebody made a great point that, by the way, you know, Hillary knew she was running for president, but didn't have the knowledge and foresight to stop giving those speeches. Now, is that entitlement, or is it stupidity, or is it poor judgment? I don't know, but I would think maybe she wouldn't want any Mitt Romney moments, and this seems to be it for her.
How does it not lend itself to anything but the speculation that there is a Mitt Romney moment in there? I mean, look, consider what her surrogate Bill Clinton said. What was it to Lloyd Blankfein? We could let them slit your throat. We could let them slit your throat, and they'd be happy for about 30 seconds, but then they'd want more. So why shouldn't we wonder if there's something like that in those transcripts? But I know you got to go. But that comes back to the question of, why leave this open for speculation?
And by the way, not for nothing, why do it in the first place? Have some foresight, woman. Have some judgment. This goes to her judgment, too.
Oh, well, there's a lot of things that go to her judgment.
You know, and that's
there's
why
that, there's still that pesky old Iraq vote that goes to her judgment.
Yeah, I know. And it's like it's on top of it and it's on top of it and it's on top of it. And I'm just sick of it. And I can't wait till we have a convention.
And you know, and I get pushback for saying, look, I'm going to vote for her if she's the nominee. I am goddamn sure not going to vote for Ted Cruz or Donald Trump. What the fuck?
What about Gary Johnson? He looks nice.
Yeah, no, thank you. And pass on Jill Stein, too.
Yeah, I hear you.
But the fact is, while I get pushback for it, I know what I'm dealing with, and I would rather, you know, the longer you let a boil fester, the worse it is when you lance it.
Thank you. And I understand she feels like she's always been scrutinized, but this is what you signed up for. Get over it.
There you go. Thomas, good conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob, and I apologize for preempting you as usual.
I'll get over it. You've got some preempting to do. Later.
Amen. Bye-bye.
Our buddy Thomas from FYINation.com. Let's check in over San Diego way with our buddy Scott.
Hello, Bob, you old sugar booger.
Oh, how are you?
How you doing?
How's Punkin?
Punky, he's okay. I put him in the other room. So
sorry, Punky. Well, I heard him.
Oh, well, I guess I could put I could waterboard him or put a hood over him and attach him to a D-shell.
I'd rather enjoy his commentary. It is certainly more sane and lucid than anything you can get in right-wing radio.
Well, there you go. Hey, listen, I was a little late to the proceedings today, but I caught part of Thomas's call. Here's how I keep it straight, okay, in terms of candidates. And it amazes me that we're so many months into the process that, and we've got Democrats who they're playing the confused game. Well, I'm just so confused. And you got to know that there's a payoff to people walking around upright on two legs playing the confused racket. They get some sort of payoff from it, because it actually, the payoff that they get is it keeps them from choosing, from making up their goddamn mind. And so here's how I keep it straight. And this is a public service for those who are playing the confused game. Okay. When considering which candidate to support for president, you cannot go wrong by applying Dr. Martin Luther King's test of issues. For me, it all comes down to who the candidate is in the matter of three big evils: racism, militarism, and greed. If the candidate cannot pass that test, they do not get my vote.
Okay, so let's take that test and let's apply it to the current situation.
Okay, well, who do you want to go first with? Any of the Republicans?
There are ways to time. I don't think there's any risk of it. they fail all three.
That room has got more dunce caps and corners. They've run out of corners with those fuckers. But anyway, with Hillary, with Bernie, I'll do the simple part first, the way I used to take tests in school. The stuff that I know that I can nail, I'll do first and then ponder the other ones. But with Bernie, I know that he is very much the person I need him to be when it comes to racism. He don't have a racist bone in his 70-some-year-old body. Militarism, hell, that's a no-brainer. He believes in defense, but he doesn't believe in enriching these military-industrial congressional complex bastards who have overtaken the Pentagon. Okay, so we know he's okay on racism and militarism. As far as greed, you cannot do better with an anti-greed candidate than with Bernie Sanders. I mean, you would have to get up awfully early in the morning to find somebody who passes with flying colors this simple test.
I'm with you so far.
So, okay, now let's turn on the other side of the ledger. Let's talk about Hillary. All right, in terms of racism, I am not entirely convinced that she's doing nothing more than saying the thing that it will be a bland sort of, what is the word, when you're talking about one size fits all, non-offensive.
Pablum?
Pablum, yeah, that's a good word. That's a good word. But in advertising, there's a thing where you test the message before you make a multi-million-dollar network buy for commercials for your product. And you get what they call a focus group. And with the focus group, you take people that are representative of the real world, or at least the audience that you best wish to impress best, and you run that message by them to see how it flies with them. Because if it doesn't fly with them, it's not going to hit your target in terms of who you're trying to reach with your advertisement. Well, in terms of racism, my take on Hillary is that she has focus grouped the entire topic to a death that defies description. I mean, it's just amazing to me that anybody can get excited about anything she said.
Well, go back, Scott, to the earliest days of the campaign. And find me the speeches where she was talking about income inequality.
Yeah, that ought to be easy.
find me the speeches where she was talking about getting tough on Wall Street.
Yeah, there's that.
Because none of those things become issues until Bernie Sanders shows that they really, really, really matter to voters in this country.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, people say, why don't you like Hillary? Well, she does, in my estimation, for what it's worth, Hillary doesn't meet me where I live. Okay? Whoever she's talking to, it ain't me. Simply because she would probably step over me and people like me, to quote George Carlin, or to paraphrase George Carlin, on the sidewalk, laying in a pool of my own piss, on her way to a political rally, or more appropriately, a big buck corporate speech. You know, I just she doesn't strike me as the type of person who gives a flying fuck about me and people like me.
And
Bernie, on the other hand, he is the type of person who would bend over backwards, I think, to look at you like a human being who has worth and value, not just a dollar sign, or not just a vote, or not just a political point. Does that make sense?
No, it absolutely does. I think your analysis is pretty well spot on. There's something that seems, and I try to be super cognizant of hypercognizant of not letting myself be influenced by the right-wing hate machine. So, you know, you no one has ever tuned into this program and heard me say, well, maybe there is something to that Benghazi stuff, or, oh my God, maybe those emails really do contain the smoking gun, or, you know, any of the silly shit that they've been pumping into the body politic for a quarter of a century.
Well, and see,
but I will raise questions about her commitment to the needs of the American people where it concerns things like health care, because she's put forward no plan, of which I am aware, that finds a way to ensure all the millions of people in the Deep South and other parts of the country, too, whose governors and Republican legislatures rejected the Medicaid expansion. Nothing there.
Right.
And she says, I'm going to be the best thing that ever happened to women. And at the same time says you can be a feminist and pro-life at the same time, and says, well, yes, I could negotiate away parts of a woman's right to choose if the Republicans would just provide an exception for the life of the mother.
Yeah, well, it just troubles me that people are so easily fooled or bamboozled or whatever the expression is with this woman. And God knows with the Republicans, I've given up hope for the voters who think that they are just the cat's pajamas, because they're not in the same reality as the rest of us. I mean, you talk about Benghazi and the emails and all of that happy horse shit. It really comes down to tactics that are common with your teenager who you've challenged when you've discovered they've done something wrong or bad. They will bullshit you blind. I've never had kids, but I've been one, so I know of what I speak.
Well, amen. And there's one, you know, there's one more thing, Scott. And that's this. And I've been thinking about this for a while. Before this campaign started, it was hard to find anyone who called him or herself a Democrat who was not in complete agreement that the Citizens United decision was just a loading bolus dose of poison into our body politic.
Yeah.
But with the rise of Bernie's candidacy and his refusal to have a PAC, to take PAC money or massive corporate donations, suddenly the Hilarians find themselves defending Hillary Clinton's wide-armed embrace of Citizens United. You can't sit there and say Citizens United has got to go and you know, wave to the crowd with one hand while you're reaching out for some more Citizens United money with the other.
Yeah, and there was a thing in the news recently. There's so much of it, it's hard to keep track of it. But there was some political operative, I believe, on the Democratic or on the Democratic side, supporting or favoring Bernie, who was talking about corporate whores, and everybody, you know, just went 15 shades of 31 flavors of fa outraged over the term corporate whore. Well, if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, and you can see a lot of zeros before a decimal point in their campaign coffers, then it's a duck, okay? And if the shoe fits, you know, I guess you could be upset about it, but you can't deny reality. And a whore, I mean, they say, well, that's a sexist thing. That's a sexist distinction. Well, it's a word, okay? And it's a word that conveys a concept. And the concept in this case is you've got a political candidate or a political party or an individual who's on their knees with themselves wrapped around a big old corporate wang, as it were. Okay, there's just no other way to describe it, and they're taking money for services rendered. Basically, is what it comes down to. If that's not being a whore, then I don't know what is. And by all of this, I don't mean to impugn the reputation of legitimate sex workers who are just trying to make it in the world.
Well,
okay?
And the other thing, you know, I mean, that word, that particular word, I just call it capitalism.
Yeah, well, because
capitalism will consume anything. Capitalism will consume sex. Capitalism will consume water. Capitalism will consume love. Capitalism will consume hate. Capitalism consumes.
Yeah, and in nature, we call those things cancers, okay? And,
yes.
And that's really what capitalism is. I don't think that people shouldn't go as far as their brains and their abilities will take them, okay? But at whose expense is what it comes down to. And if it turns into a giant orgy or bacchanal where, you know, we're not even invited to the party, and if we're there at all, it's to serve these bastards, then yeah, you've got to look at it with truthful eyes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway,
now you know, by way of moderation, Steve just wrote in from New York saying, "I like Bernie a lot, Bob, but Bernie's a human. He's also a politician. One doesn't get to his position being Mr. Nice. Every person has feet of clay. As much as I hate saying this, we do need to be realistic about a person's character." And that's true. You know, I've met the man. He is absolutely, utterly, incontrovertibly human. But that having been said, his actions have reflected his policies. His actions have reflected his philosophy.
Yeah, well,
the big money donors know better than to try to walk through his door.
And the thing is, though, when you use that test to make a determination, you look at how well Bernie does or doesn't do. But you, in fairness, you must also look at how well or how poorly Hillary and Bill and that cadre of folks does. And there's just no comparison. It's the difference between, you know, sunshine and a rainstorm.
Well, it is, as far as I'm concerned. And there are just, you know, there's, I mean, we talk about Bernie being a little bit irascible. There's too many anecdotal stories out there. I remember when our good buddy, Eric Bjorn, told his story about his brush with greatness with Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton. And the upshot of his experience was that he said, "I would never, ever, 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 ever vote for her." He said, "She's just a terrible human being." And people have a right to make that determination.
Yeah.
Especially when that determination is made based upon one-to-one human contact. And, of course, I know you listen to Malloy. I listen to Malloy. And I heard the story Mike told the other night. Mike and Kathy talking together.
Oh, yeah, with the Drobnys, yeah.
And so, you know, that's all there.
Well, but
the upshot of it is, and I want to be clear about this, Scott. She is manifestly better as a potential president than Trump or Cruz, especially Cruz. Okay, I mean, I feel really weird saying this, Scott, but in my hierarchy between the two Republicans, if you just absolutely had the red hot coals ready to apply to the soles of my poor little feet, and said you got to pick one, I'm going to go, "Oh, Trump." I mean, well, he looks like Mussolini. He's got all the earmarks of a fascist. But Cruz is a dangerous ideologue. Trump is not an ideologue. Cruz is.
Well, Cruz is Joseph McCarthy come back reanimated.
Well, with the addition of a Bible, okay?
Yeah, Cruz is that
mid-20th century warning that when fascism comes to America, it will be wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross.
Exactly. Exactly. And don't forget Kasich.
Oh, no, Kasich is just the warm, fuzzy face of fascism.
Yeah, exactly. So when it comes down to it, you take those five people, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, Cruz, Trump, and Kasich, and run them through the test of who these people are in the matter of evil, these three evils, racism, militarism, and greed, and the only choice you can come up with as far as someone who gets a passing grade with a star, a little gold star at the top of the paper, is Senator Sanders. I mean, there's just no two ways about it.
Now, I will offer this caveat, Scott, and if this makes me disloyal or a bad person, so be it. I wish, because the minute that Bernie puts those tax returns out, you know, he already released last year's.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of reason to expect that the previous years are much different either. I mean, the guy has lived on his senator salary. which is more than any other senator can say. I mean, you might recall that little Marco Rubio was complaining that he was having a hard time putting food on his family on his paltry senator's salary. So yeah, now he's not going to be senator anymore, and he's going to go off and get himself a tasty little job with some think tank somewhere that'll pay him a couple of cool million dollars a year.
Yeah.
But that having been said, I wish Senator Sanders would go ahead and release a couple of tax returns and tell Hillary to shut the up. Now release the goddamn transcripts. And we're back to where we started. I want those transcripts released. Because, yeah. and not because I hate Hillary. I don't hate that woman. I just see her for the sort of person that she is within America's political class, okay? She's not like me. I'm not like her. There's no intersection point between her life and her family and my life and my family, apart from the fact that we are both, you know, nominally Americans. You know, her grandbabies are never going to have to have their cradles rattled by a blast on a mountain a couple of miles away. She would not tolerate that. And she would not permit her family to live anywhere near where that was happening.
Well, and see, another test. Do the trading places game. If it's such a good deal, would you willingly switch places with the other person? Okay, I think that's what you're getting at with her and the mountaintop leveling.
Oh, no, wait, time out. I would not switch places with Hillary Clinton for love nor money.
No, I'm talking about her.
No, but I mean, I want to go down that road. I would not want for a moment to consider that at any point in my life that my phone would ring and it would be my personal assistant saying, don't forget your lunch with Henry motherfucking Kissinger today.
Yeah. No, I know, but the point I was making is, would she, if it's such a good deal for you, for mountaintop leveling to occur in your wild and wonderful West Virginia, would she willingly trade places with you? And I think we know the answer.
Never in a million goddamn years.
Oh, of course not. Of course not, because it's good enough for you.
Well, I mean, when they went to the White House, they were from Arkansas. You'll notice they didn't. Pack up and move back to the. Move back to the glorious wonders that is life in Arkanstan.
Well, exactly. That should tell you something right there.
I mean, that's straight out of Green Acres. New York is where I'd rather be. I get allergic smelling hay. I just adore a penthouse view. Darling, I love you, but give me Fifth Avenue.
Yeah, there you go.
Why do I remember that? Why is that seared into my brain, Scott? What's wrong with me?
Well, it was a great television show. It's one of the funniest damn shows of the 60s, in my estimation.
I think it was a brilliant little exercise in surrealism. God, I loved it when Mr. Douglas would start talking about the tender corn shoots a-sticking there and the yeoman farmers, and Ebb would just look at him with that sort of bemused look in his eye, and, well, where's that music coming from? Because there'd be a fife and drum. Right. It was gorgeous. I personally think it's still funny.
Well, if you go back to the old days of radio, I believe that Paul Henning, the guy who created Green Acres, was a writer years and years ago for Burns and Allen.
Well, then that would explain it.
Well, if you remember the character that Gracie portrayed in that show, and in real life she was totally different, but for purposes of Burns and Allen show, she couldn't have been more ditzy and surreal.
And of course that I don't know, maybe somebody, well, Jack Benny did it to a certain extent too, but the Burns and Allen show, especially when it transitioned to TV, just took a sledgehammer to the fourth wall.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when George would just take that cigar out of his mouth and, oh, I'm sorry, it was Park Avenue, not Fifth Avenue. Thank you, Randy. Yeah, it is Park Avenue. I had to rerun it in my head. but he'd take that cigar out of his mouth and take a couple of steps toward the camera and address the audience directly. You know, you see what's going on behind me here.
Yeah. Well, the best example of that breaking of the fourth wall, I forget the names of the actors, but at one point, the guy that played B. Benaderet's husband in the show, the actor got a better job, so they needed a replacement actor. Well, before they brought in the new version of whatever the character's name was, Burns stepped forward. They froze the picture, and he stepped forward to explain to the audience, and he used the guy's name. He said, well, so-and-so has got this great opportunity to go on to Broadway, and so from henceforth and evermore, the new character's name will be portrayed by a fine actor, you know, and then he mentioned that guy's name, and then he steps back into the scene, and it proceeds. It's almost cartoonish the way they used to do that. Like the road run, like the Wile E. Coyote running off the edge of the cliff and standing there on midair, and didn't realize he was there until he looked down, and then down he goes, you know. Anyway, I've gone far afield here. We've gone from Dr. Martin Luther King's test of issues to Burns and Allen and Green Acres. This is why I love America. It's the land of opportunity.
This is why I love conversation radio, Scott.
Yeah.
Try to do this on the Limbaugh program, why don't you?
Well, and do it now because he's getting a big pay cut soon.
And you know, poor, you know, the poor Beckerhead's little old head would just go poof.
Yeah, I will not miss him when he's gone. Believe me, God, he and iHeart and that whole mindset.
They're on the way out. And the best part of it all is the demise of what was then Clear Channel and is now iHeartRadio was engineered by a takeover by the fine folks at Bain Capital.
Yeah, yeah.
Just and lovely.
It breaks my heart because I think I told you when you were filling in for Mike last week or week before that my background was in radio, and it just breaks your heart. It's that old thing, look what they've done to my song, Ma.
Look, I mean, I would give anything if one of my kids had had the same opportunity I did to go and sit down and spin bad records for people who wanted to listen to terrible music and learn how to read the news and edit and do segues of vinyl or but none of those jobs don't exist anymore.
No, because it's all piped in via satellite from some overpaid, bloviating, OxyContin, cigar-smoking, thrice-married twerp like Limbaugh and all the rest.
Okay, we've now identified the one thing I have in common with Rush Limbaugh. And it's the cigar-smoking thing, and I'm sorry, I refuse to give that up just to eliminate all traces of any comparison. No.
Yeah, but it's the motive and the portrayal. I'm sure when you smoke a good cigar, you smoke it for purposes of enjoying it and smoking it. He smokes cigars in a threatening manner, just like he does every other goddamn thing. You know? That's my take, anyway.
Well, amen to that. Scott, great conversation. Thank you for your time evening. Have a good evening, and my best to Punky.
Okay, see ya.
Bye. Later. Our buddy Scott in San Diego, and Punky too. I like Punky a lot. So that's where we find ourselves here at 24 minutes before the hour. And a reminder, okay, we got 24 minutes to get 20 people at $5, one at 100, two at 50, four at 25. Five at 20, 20 at five, 10 at 10, whatever. But we got a $100 challenge on the table that will, that if it is met, will leave us only, $15 short. And, you know, we can handle a $215, fundraising goal for Friday on the front porch. Okay? So that's out there. You know where the PayPal button is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Let's see here. Hey, let's go over and talk to Charlie. Hey, Charlie.
How's it going, Bob?
I'm among the living. How about you?
I guess so. The thing you were talking about Hillary Clinton earlier, I mean, there are so many people out there. I've always heard people, some of the people say that Hillary Clinton's got contacts and she can let me kill the stream there. That she can help everybody out because she has contacts. And Hillary Clinton probably does have contacts, but the only person Hillary Clinton's going to help out is Hillary Clinton.
Well, I don't. She's got incremental policies that will be a little help to some people. But it's that incrementalism, Charlie, that causes me so much angst. Because we're not at a point in this country where incrementalism will do anymore.
Yeah.
We can't wait. Raising the minimum wage to $12 an hour 5 years from now. Well, you know, 5 years from now, that $12 an hour will be worth the $7 and the $8.25 now, whatever it is. You get my meaning?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean,
that's just maintaining the status quo. That's just keeping the crumbling empire trundling along down this mud rut road.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, every time I see Hillary, I can look at her and tell you that she's just basically an evil person. I mean, all you got to do is look at her and listen to her for 15 minutes.
Well, she certainly puts me off.
And
I work really hard to try not to make the same mistake that so many other people make, but she is off-putting. And it is not because she is a woman, okay? I could listen to Elizabeth Warren all day long, and I can disagree with Elizabeth Warren. But you know what? If you disagree with Hillary Clinton, you know, you're the enemy. You're not agreeing to disagree. You're the goddamned enemy. And yeah, as Randy tells me, the minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. Except in places that have, you know, in states that have run it up to, you know, a higher amount.
Kind of reminds you of the old dim leader, if you're not for us, you're against us.
Well, it's an identical mindset. And God forbid, you know, look, if she, and I know this is a great concern to a lot of people, if she decides to go to war, woe betide anybody who dares to stand up in favor of peace or anti-war, because I'm sure that, you know, they will be vilified by her machine. And make no mistake, there's a machine. I mean, there's a lot of people in the for-profit media who are cozying up as much as they can to the campaign, because the coin of the realm in the for-profit media world, Charlie, is access.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things I don't ever have to worry about is having an earnest and honest conversation with Hillary Clinton, because it ain't gonna happen. Because I've been critical. Because she doesn't, you know, listen, I mean, did you hear the way she spoke to that reporter who asked her a simple, straightforward question about the transcripts?
And that really should set the American people off, you know, and they should be listening too. And I tell you what, I can't believe this Debbie Wasserman Schultz or whatever her name is from Florida. If I were to ever meet that woman, she'd see my center digit, and I'd tell her to go do to herself what husbands and wives do to each other and just leave me alone. Because I'm sorry.
Well, the thing, Charlie, the thing that is being made most abundantly clear is that the Democratic Party's got to do some real work on itself when this is all over. And the only way that's going to happen is if Bernie's the nominee, because if Hillary's the nominee, it'll mean that the system worked and there's no problem with the Democratic Party. But people, you know, insiders will even admit, you know, the superdelegates exist to stop the candidacies of people like Bernie Sanders. Because the last thing in the world the Democratic Party establishment wants is for any goddamn democracy to go breaking out all over the place.
Yeah. But I don't, it just, I'm just beside myself. I mean, I'm not very too enthusiastic about Barack Obama anymore. As far as I'm concerned, he's a Republican in Democratic clothing.
He's a center-right American politician. And I think history will look back and say that for what he was quite a good president. And history will ask the question, because history is so good at them, Charlie. History will ask the question, what if Barack Obama had had a Congress he could work with?
I'm not too sure that Barack Obama would have done anything any different if he had had a Congress he can work with. Barack Obama is a Republican. He's not a Democrat.
I think in former decades, in former eras, there's no argument to be had about that. Barack Obama would have been a great successor to Dwight Eisenhower.
Mm-hmm.
If Barack Obama had been president instead of Richard Nixon, I don't know. He might actually, for all of Nixon's criminality and crookedness and craziness, Barack Obama might be a little bit to the right of Richard Nixon. I don't know. But we'll never know because there wasn't a Congress there. That's the problem.
And if this, Ted Cruz gets in, I mean, it's going to be all over. I mean, we'll be a slave to Israel. Netanyahu will rule the United States, and
well, know, at the very least, the tail will wag the dog. And the thing is, remember, Ted Cruz is waiting for Jesus to come back, so it's okay with him if the blood runs as high as the bridle of a horse in the Middle East, because that'll mean that'll just be a sign that Jesus is up in heaven, cranking up the holy Harley to ride on down and smite.
Where do they get this that war will bring Jesus back? I'm curious where that comes from, because I can't find it in the Bible.
Oh, well, it's all that millennialist claptrap. But it starts with the battle at Harmageddo.
Oh, in the Megiddo Valley.
Yeah.
Well, that's just a figure of speech. I mean, everybody's going to have to get super small to put all the armies in the world in the Megiddo Valley.
Yeah, but back when, but remember, it was written by a guy who was hallucinating his balls off, Charlie.
Yeah, and
drinking the bad water on the island of Patmos or whatever. And he had a vision of world conquest, and frankly, you know, there were places where there were that level of bloody battles. By the time John of Patmos is writing, there were stories of Roman incursions into Parthia, and the Parthians just handing them their asses.
Yeah,
I mean the tales of the there were whole legions that were lost. And remember, you know, Caesar, at the time Caesar was murdered, he was getting ready to go and try to open a can of whoop-ass on the Parthians.
But, you know, these people that like over in Cock County, Tennessee and all, that handle the snakes and all that, I don't think they understand the symbolism that's in the Book of Revelation.
Well, no, they don't understand that it's symbolism, Charlie. It is prophecy, and prophecy is not symbolism. Prophecy is something that is going to happen.
Well, from what I can gather from the Book of Revelations, most of it has already happened whenever the Roman Empire fell.
Well, it is. I mean, there's a whole bunch of revelations just about Nero.
Yep.
And you know, Paul, Saul of Tarsus, who goes on the lam and changes his name to Paul, because that you know that name already existed in the Roman Empire. Paulus.
Mm-hmm.
Makes him sound a little bit more palatable, a little less Jewish to the Gentile populations to whom he was preaching. You know, that whole business about slaves obey your masters that appears in the Pauline writings,
mm-hmm.
That's an attempt to tell the Roman Empire, hey, back off, it's okay. We're on your side. We don't want any slave uprisings. We just want to go to heaven when Jesus comes back, okay?
I guess.
And then, of course, it all got out of hand.
I just I cannot understand the premillennial doctrine.
That's because you've got a rational mind.
I mean, it's pathetic. And it's pathetic that we have these holy rollers that believe this. And
well, I mean, there was a story that came out earlier today from CBS News. All these potty bills, all these anti-LGBT bills that are poisoning the country and your state, my state. Well, guess who's behind them all?
Oh, the church, the pastors and the churches.
No. It's that organization run by that pettifogging scoundrel who defended Sister Clark Kim Davis.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Ta-da! Yeah.
I read about that Kim Davis, and that old gal's had a rough life. I couldn't believe it. She's got more baggage than I've ever seen in my life.
Well, there is that. There is.
And I don't know. It's just, I just sit back and just laugh at these people. It's kind of like that Hillsong parody that you play on Wednesday nights.
Yeah, there's nothing like that. And I wish I had more time. We would play the clip of John Kasich explaining the relationship of Christ to Passover to some ultra-Orthodox Jews in New York. Because that's just, I mean, you can't make that stuff up. That's some good shit.
Is this on YouTube?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, how would I find it?
I'm looking at the story from Raw Story. The title is Oy Vey, John Kasich, Jesus Explains to New York Jews How Passover is Linked to Christ's Blood.
Oh, okay. Because I was always under the impression that Passover was a Jewish holiday and
they're two separate religions. Yeah, they kind of invented it. But remember, Jesus went in, you know, rode the donkey in and all the palm leaves and all of that baloney at the time of Passover in Jerusalem. So,
yeah.
Hey, Charlie, good talking with you, my friend.
Okay,
all right,
catch
we'll talk
later.
Soon. All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Now. Our buddy Charlie calling from Tennessee. 10 minutes before the hour, 10 minutes to go to meet Bob in Texas' $100 challenge. Thus far, So, there we go. Hopefully that will not remain so. Because it would be awfully nice just to have a regular sort of fundraising goal tomorrow night instead of, you know, 300 and, you know, what a, right. See, a couple of notes. Bob, now you can't go around talking about all this living wage nonsense and other such liberal craziness. Americans are the most productive people in the world, in spite of the fact that they make some of the worst wages and work the longest hours and take the least number of holidays on the whole wide green earth. You start paying folks a real living wage based on the actual cost of living, and before you know it, the big corporate interests will have to start cutting the standard work week down to something like 35 hours due to production and supply issues, and people will start needing to do something with all that extra time on their idle hands, like taking paid holidays, or investing in continuing education and training for themselves and their children, or seeing more of the world like all those other unionized workers in Europe who take 40 or 50 days of vacation a year and have more time for reading books or eating good food and drinking fancy champagne or maybe just taking a break from the daily grind long enough to get bored and restless and, you know, go back to work all happy and productive and shit. Jesus! Just think of where all this insanity could end up going. High wages, educated minds, art and culture, and people living meaningful lives and getting along with one another. Maybe a little tolerance and brotherly love if we're not careful. And holy Toledo, before you know it, democracy and freedom and peace and prosperity, not to mention happiness breaking out all over for damn near everybody and damn near for free. Who can bear to think of on that for more than a minute? Not me, brother. Of course, you can always go the Chinese route for those who aren't lucky enough to be rounded up by the headhunters looking for cheap labor at the Nike factory. Six men or women standing around a hole watching the seventh dig. But, you know, they're eating regular and not shooting their children down in the streets either. Regards, Steve in China. Yeah, you can't have that happiness busting out all over the place. I mean, that's just too damn much. Meanwhile, a note from our buddy, Ron. Who says, going back to the cigar remark, you will continue to smoke good cigars for at least as long as you have friends in Canada. And meanwhile, going back to Scott's call, Ron says, the establishment has always and will always do everything in their power to game the outcome in their favor. But I would note that there is an incredible group of discontented folks out there. To quote Disraeli, the palace is not safe when the cottage is not happy. I have to say that Scott's summary of the five current contenders for the office of president bothers me. With the exception of Bernie, what does this say about the current state of America? Nothing good, Ron. Nothing good. Nope. Thanks, Charlie. Charlie says he'll be kicking in tomorrow on payday. I appreciate it. We all do very, very much. Gerald says, don't know how long I can keep doing this, but you've got another $10 tonight. You've got email. And indeed we do. So that's $90 yet to go. Thank you for getting us started on it, Gerald. That's $90 to go to meet Bob in Texas's challenge. Thank you very, very, very much, Gerald. Thank you indeed. Oh, cool. I've got a link here to the Burns and Allen episode that Scott mentioned. The Iron Deer, Gracie thinks George needs glasses. I used to sit down and watch it with my dad. And he'd say, you know, no, sit down, watch this. This is great. This is funny. And I think I picked up a lot of my appreciation for great comedy from my father. Yeah, who was not necessarily known for being a funny guy himself, but my God, he had an appreciation for it. I can't wait to watch it. Oh, goodness me. About 5 minutes before the hour, and there's... Well, okay, hey. Let's not leave it. Let's not leave anything hanging. As soon as this is over, I guess I'm going to go check out the pageant. Who's got coverage, anyway? As to Steve in China's note, Steve in New York says, I'm no dummy, but that sounded like cynicism. Ooh, I only think that's because it was, Steve. Let's let Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton finish up real quick, shall we?
When you have transparency demands that only I meet, and others running do not, you know, it kind of raises a question in my mind, will people ever be held to the same standard that I've been held to? So I've been clear. I've been clear for months. When people release transcripts of speeches they gave, I will release mine. But in the meantime, I want to see their tax returns. That's been the standard for decades, and they should meet that standard.
So you won't tell us what you said during those lunches?
You know, I talked about my experience as Secretary of State. I talked about the world we lived in. I talked about global challenges. That's what I talked about in all the speeches that I gave. That's why they asked me to come. As they asked Colin Powell, as they asked Condi Rice, as they asked Madeleine Albright, because when you come out of being Secretary of State, all kinds of people, from auto dealers to banks to healthcare professionals, are interested in your views about the world. And I probably told the story of the bin Laden raid maybe 25 times, because that's what they were interested in.
Madam Secretary.
So shut up. Oh, well. It is what it is, I guess. Some people will be happy with that. Some people think it, but whatever. So, my apologies for the late start to the program. Nothing intentional, believe you me, and I'm going to spend a bunch of the finite time of my life tomorrow trying to sort this madness out, but thank you all very kindly for joining in the conversation. Hopefully, we'll start on time for Friday on the front porch. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky, and in the chat room, thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch. Thanks to all of you who participate in the program, and thanks for your ongoing support of the program. Thank you, Gerald, and thank you, Matthew, and thank you for making the challenge, Bob, in Texas. Thank you very, very kindly. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.